Good morning. This is Artificially Intelligent News for Sunday, September 13, 2026. I'm Mark Ellison. This briefing is created with artificial intelligence and independently fact-checked against reporting and official records available through late Saturday. Here's the calm, essential report. A federal judge has ruled that a Trump administration plan to cut staffing at the Federal Emergency Management Agency by half was unlawful. U.S. District Judge Susan Ilston found that Homeland Security officials directed FEMA leadership to prepare the 50% reduction plan despite objections from agency supervisors. The ruling came in a lawsuit brought by the American Federation of Government Employees and other labor groups challenging wider efforts to reduce the federal workforce. The decision does not set FEMA's staffing level or resolve every dispute over the agency, but it is a significant legal limit on an administration proposal affecting the federal agency responsible for disaster response and recovery. FEMA has been under particular scrutiny as communities face increasingly costly storms, floods, fires, and other disasters. That distinction is important. The judge did not prescribe an alternative staffing plan. The ruling addresses how the proposed reduction was developed and directed. It leaves the administration and FEMA facing the broader practical question of how the agency will maintain disaster response capacity while workforce policy remains under legal review. Another federal court ruling has gone against the administration's energy policy. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit rejected the Energy Department's order requiring Michigan's J.H. Campbell coal plant to remain open beyond its scheduled retirement. Energy Secretary Chris Wright had invoked emergency authority, arguing that the 64-year-old plant was needed for regional grid reliability. Michigan, Illinois, Minnesota, and environmental groups challenged that decision. The appeals court found that the department had exceeded its authority and that the legal standard for an emergency had not been met. The case matters beyond one power plant. It tests how far the federal government can go in using emergency powers to delay the closure of aging generation facilities. The plant's owner and regional grid officials will now have to address reliability and retirement planning under the court's ruling. The opinion does not settle the broader debate over the region's long-term energy mix. It does require that any future federal intervention fit within the authority Congress gave the department and rest on the necessary finding of an emergency. Trade is also straining relations with a close neighbor. President Trump said Saturday that he is considering whether the United States should leave the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement after talks with Canada collapsed last month. No withdrawal has been announced. Still, the comments add uncertainty to a relationship that supports deeply integrated supply chains in autos, agriculture, energy, manufacturing, and consumer goods. Canada buys more American exports than any other country, and most trade under the agreement moves duty-free. The administration has argued that Canada's trade practices harm the United States. Canadian officials have defended their position and imposed retaliatory measures in the broader trade dispute. For businesses and workers on both sides of the border, the immediate issue is whether the friction becomes a negotiating tactic or a larger break with the trade framework now in place. Because the agreement is already the operating framework for those links, uncertainty can matter before any formal change. Companies must decide whether to treat the comments as a negotiating signal or as a risk requiring contingency plans. At the Smithsonian, President Trump has called for an expanded tribute to George Washington. In social media posts, he asked the institution to mount a special Washington exhibit through the 300th anniversary of Washington's birth in 2032. The president also asked for an 11-foot Washington statue to be placed in the National Museum of American History's Flag Hall and for a 30-foot statue outside the museum to replace the existing Infinity sculpture. These are requests from the president, not an announced Smithsonian construction plan. The proposals arrive as the Smithsonian prepares for a leadership transition. Secretary Lonnie Bunch has announced his retirement, ending a tenure in which he oversaw the institution during a period of sharp public debate over the nation's history, its museums, and the role of federal cultural institutions. No Smithsonian action has been announced in response. The request put questions of design, placement, and historical presentation before an institution that is about to select new leadership. The nation has also marked the 25th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. Memorial ceremonies were held in New York, at the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, honoring the nearly 3,000 people killed in the 2001 attacks. The CIA used the anniversary to release dozens of previously classified presidential daily briefs from the Clinton and George W. Bush administrations. The documents describe intelligence reporting involving Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda before the attacks. Declassification does not by itself settle the long-running questions about what officials knew, how warnings were assessed, or whether the attacks could have been prevented. It does give historians, families, and the public a larger official record to examine as the country reflects on an event that reshaped U.S. security policy and foreign policy. Presidential daily briefs are summaries for senior officials, and their release adds material to the public archive. They may inform future scholarship, but the documents alone do not answer every question raised by the record before the attacks. In technology, Anthropic Chief Executive Dario Amodei is calling for the artificial intelligence industry to slow the pace of capability development long enough for safety measures to catch up. Amodei's comments follow a string of disclosures and reports involving advanced AI systems used in cybersecurity testing and concerns about agents acting with too much autonomy. OpenAI has also said it is focusing on safety work before pursuing a public stock offering next year. The central question is no longer simply whether AI systems can write, code, or reason more effectively. It is whether companies and governments can set reliable controls before systems are trusted with broader access to computer networks, sensitive data, and consequential decisions. Calls for caution do not amount to a binding industry rule, but they show that safety has moved from an abstract concern to a central business and policy issue. That distinction matters when systems move from answering questions to carrying out sequences of tasks. More autonomy can make tools more useful, but it also makes questions of permissions, monitoring, and human responsibility more immediate. The debate concerns how to deploy the technology responsibly, not a single agreed standard for doing so. Companies and governments are being asked to decide what safeguards are adequate before access expands. And an Associated Press review of federal protest cases is raising questions about the Justice Department's efforts to bring felony assault charges related to demonstrations against immigration enforcement. The review found that judges and juries have often been unconvinced by some of the government's more serious allegations. In several cases, charges were dismissed, reduced, or failed to produce convictions. The Justice Department has brought cases involving demonstrations at or near immigration and customs enforcement facilities in several cities. That does not mean every defendant has been cleared, and each case turns on its own evidence. But the findings matter because felony charges carry serious consequences and because the prosecutions are occurring amid an unusually contentious national debate over immigration enforcement, protest rights, and the limits of federal power. The review draws a distinction between accusations and final outcomes. Prosecutors still have the burden of proving the charges, and courts evaluate the evidence case by case. The pattern reported by AP therefore bears on the practical use of serious charges, not on a blanket conclusion about every protest. Overseas, pressure is mounting around Middle East energy routes. Iraq says attacks on Saudi Arabia's east-west pipeline originated from its territory. Saudi Arabia has closed the pipeline after drone attacks, while Iran continues to disrupt shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. The United States and its allies have attributed many regional attacks to Iranian-backed groups. Tehran denies responsibility for some incidents, and the wider conflict remains fluid. What is clear is that the risks now extend beyond military sites. Oil infrastructure, commercial shipping, and the waterways that carry a major share of the world's energy supplies are all under pressure. That has consequences far from the region. Disruptions in oil and shipping markets can raise fuel, transport, food, and manufacturing costs for consumers in the United States and around the world. Regional officials have discussed diplomatic contacts, but there is no announced agreement that would restore normal passage through Hormuz or remove the immediate threat to Saudi infrastructure. The Strait of Hormuz is a critical transit point for world energy supplies, while the East-West pipeline is an important Saudi route. Pressure on both illustrates why incidents in the region can influence global prices even when they occur far from American consumers. Ukraine endured another major Russian attack overnight into Saturday. Ukrainian officials said Russian strikes killed 8 civilians and wounded dozens more across the country. 2 people were reported killed when drones struck a residential area in Zaporizhia. In and around Odessa, local officials said a large attack wounded 35 people. Russia says it targets military-related sites, while Ukraine says the campaign has repeatedly damaged civilian areas and critical infrastructure. The attacks came after President Vladimir Putin warned that sending European troops into Ukraine would mean direct conflict with Russia. The warning underscores how difficult security guarantees remain in any future peace effort. The United Nations has documented a sharp rise in civilian casualties in Ukraine this year, with long-range missiles and drones a leading cause. Initial casualty figures in such attacks can change as emergency workers assess damaged areas. The reported strikes nonetheless reinforce the continuing danger to civilians as diplomacy and security discussions continue. On the markets, Friday was the most recent completed U.S. trading session. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 52,573.29, up 509.19 points, or 1%. The S&P 500 closed at 7,656.98, up 65.28 points, or 0.9%. The Nasdaq Composite finished at 26,333.04, up 251.31 points, or 1%. Those are final Friday closes, not futures or intraday prices. Stocks recovered after four straight down days as oil prices eased and investors absorbed the latest inflation report. The Labor Department said the Consumer Price Index rose 0.4% in August after increasing 0.1% in July. Prices were 3.4% higher than a year earlier. Excluding food and energy, core consumer prices rose 0.3% for the month and 2.4% over the year. Higher fuel costs were an important part of the headline increase. The report keeps inflation above the Federal Reserve's longer-run objective and raises the stakes for the Fed meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday. The central bank has not yet made a decision. A rate increase could push borrowing costs higher for mortgages, car loans, and businesses, while holding steady would leave policymakers explaining how they assess persistent price pressure and the risks to growth. The monthly measure compares August with July, and the annual measure compares August with the same month last year. The core figure is watched closely because it excludes food and energy categories, which can move sharply. The data give policymakers another measure of underlying inflation pressure. Investors will also look for how officials describe the balance between inflation and growth. In sports, Texas delivered one of the most dramatic college football results of the young season. Fourth-ranked Texas beat number one Ohio State, 24-23, after trailing by 20 points in the fourth quarter. Arch Manning threw for 196 yards and a touchdown as the Longhorns rallied from a 23-3 deficit. Ryan Wingo's touchdown catch began the comeback. Hollywood Smothers then scored the winning one-yard touchdown run with 25 seconds remaining. Ohio State had a chance to preserve the lead, but Connor Hawkins missed a 45-yard field goal attempt before Texas drove for the decisive score. According to Sportradar, it was the largest fourth-quarter comeback victory against an AP number one team. Texas moves to 2-0. Ohio State is 1-1. Texas's rally changed the result of a game that had appeared to be in Ohio State's control entering the final quarter. It immediately becomes a defining early season result for both highly ranked teams. At the U.S. Open, Elena Rybakina beat Aryna Sabalenka 6-4, 5-7, 6-2 to win her first title at Flushing Meadows. Rybakina, the 27-year-old Kazakhstan player born in Russia, had already secured the number one ranking that will take effect next week. Saturday's victory gave her the trophy that Sabalenka had won in each of the previous 2 years. It is Rybakina's third Grand Slam title and her second this season after the Australian Open. She now needs the French Open to complete a career Grand Slam. Sabalenka had reached four straight U.S. Open finals and had made at least the semifinals in six consecutive appearances, making Rybakina's victory an especially significant shift at the top of women's tennis. For Rybakina, the title pairs a major trophy with the ranking milestone awaiting her next week. A quick results roundup from Saturday. Oklahoma State stunned sixth-ranked Oregon 39-31, ending a 12-game losing streak. In Major League Baseball's Subway Series, the Mets routed the Yankees 12-2. The Marlins edged the Dodgers 4-3, and the Braves beat the Phillies 12-2. At the Women's Basketball World Cup in Berlin, the United States defeated Spain 76-66 in the semifinals. Team USA will face France for the championship after France beat Germany 86-64. And in the Solheim Cup, Europe led the United States 7-5 after Saturday morning foursomes before the afternoon matches brought the teams level heading into the final day. In entertainment, the Venice Film Festival has awarded its Golden Lion to Woman Unknown, a Danish drama directed by May L. Tukey. The film is set in Denmark after the Nazi occupation and explores the female body as a site of conflict and power. L. Tukey was the only woman to direct a competition film alone this year, and she becomes the eighth woman to win Venice's top prize. John Malkovich won Best Actor for the dark CIA comedy Wild Horse 9. The award choices were made by a jury led by Maggie Gyllenhaal. Venice is one of the industry's major early indicators for award season attention, though a festival prize does not guarantee commercial success or an Academy Award nomination. The Golden Lion is the festival's highest honor and can raise a film's profile as the award season begins. That is the briefing for this Sunday. Court limits on FEMA and coal plant policy, fresh questions over Canada trade and AI safety, continuing danger in the Middle East and Ukraine, and major results from Texas, New York, Berlin, and Venice. Please follow Artificially Intelligent News and share this briefing with one person who would value a calm morning news summary. I'm Mark Ellison. Take care.